Well, the reason why I call them agitators is because that's what administrators, people in power, that's what they call them, agitators. People who go around and get things started, you know, negative things. But the intent from the students from UNC and A&T in Greensboro, North Carolina Central, which was called Durham College at the time. I don't think it was not called North Carolina Central, it was called something else. But anyway, they came over. Their intent was for everybody to get fair treatment in school, also fair treatment in restaurants or stores, wherever you go, because a lot of things were happening outside of school that was wrong. So they wanted fair treatment for everyone. And so it was a little bit different message that you got from, you know, Black Student Movement and other colleges. And so when you had the other type of agitators, as they were called, Black Militants or Black Panthers, whoever, their message was a little bit different. Whereas in the civil rights, you're willing to take time to make changes. You're willing to march. You're willing to get wet by water hoses, dogs running you down, beaten by cops and all. That's part of getting your freedom. Your freedom to do what everyone else does in America. And that is to be treated right. And you have all the rights that's been afforded you under the Constitution of the United States. Okay, now that's what they were about. But some of your militant roots were, they wanted the same things, but they didn't want to wait. And they did not care how they got them. And so you had to be careful which groups you got all caught up in. The groups that I got caught up in were the ones that came from the university and came from you know, other Black colleges and all. And the reason I got involved with them, because they taught us how to wait. They taught us how to do things to get the best effect. And that was patience. You were taught patience, but you were always, you were taught, put your grievances in writing. Don't tell people what you want. You put it in writing because that's a document. They cannot deny a document if you put it in writing and make yourself a copy of it. So they can't say they never received it because you have a copy of it. And you write up here on the date when you gave it to them, the date when they received it, who received it, and you keep it. And so you learn a different way, and I found this way to be more effective. Now, for my brothers and my mother, because my mother had all of us out walking with her whenever they had, you know, freedom marches in Chapel Hill. She had us all. I had my baby brother pushing him in a stroller. Had my younger sisters walking right behind her, and we were there. I mean, your whole family turned out, but most of the time, one parent turned out, and that would be, you know, like your mother. Jails, they were reluctant to keep women, you know, in the lockup because they didn't really have anywhere for them to go. And so, but they were not reluctant to keep men in jail. Teenage boys, that was something different. But grown men, it was a little bit different. So my father stayed out of it as far as going to jail, you know, sit-ins and all that.
Did they arrest any of the students at the high school?
When we were marching, yes. But we knew we were going to get out. All
you
had to do.
High school with the protests?
No, I don't remember them arresting anyone. They got some names. But these other guys here can tell you if anybody was arrested.
Were they suspended?
Oh, yes. Lots of people were suspended that day for all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. But the best way was to try to get these kids and everybody back into school because the school got the message. You know, it had a big effect on the school administrators, why these kids, what led these kids up to do what they did. When you ignore people, that's what happens. They try to figure out a way that they can get your attention.
So the administration allowed the Black students to meet and come up with...
No. This was after.
Yes, after.
This was after all of this stuff, but right. We could meet anytime during lunch. You know, we could have done that during lunch, but, you know, we did, you know, we met some during lunch, but that was only for lunch period, and when it was over, we, you know. But It was just too much anger.
Afterwards, you were still meeting at lunch, or did you have special time?
Well, we had, they allowed us to have a special time sometime to meet.
And did they have a teacher there with you listening to your grievances?
No, not really, because what we did, we would write up things and take it back. And we would give it to a teacher, and that teacher gave it to the principal. What they were doing is letting black students express themselves. And the only way that the school themselves could help us is that we would have to tell them what's wrong, why we're angry, and what things we want to change. And so the only way to do that, we had to get together and ask each other, what is wrong? How can the school fix this? And so how can we make the school better for everyone? So we would discuss it, and then, you know, we'd write it down, and we'd just pass it on. So we saw changes, but those were changes that were forced. But you still have some of the same problems at the school now, years later. But you don't have the same caliber of students that you have when I was coming along, because the civil rights, when we were coming along in that era, everybody was complaining. And it was the opportune time to air your grievances.
Can you review for me some of the changes that you saw while you were at Chapel High School, and some of the changes that haven't been made, some of the problems that exist that might be solved if they made further changes?
Well, the biggest change was the attitude in whites. They knew that the blacks were not going anywhere. You know, any acts against them was not going to be tolerated. Any teacher who was kind of trapped in the middle, trapped between favoring white students over black students, they knew that now she was going to have to be she or he was going to have to be a real teacher. You have to teach everybody. And, you couldn't talk down on students. Of black students here. You couldn't make them feel like they're a dummy in class. I mean, teachers had to learn a new way of teaching, because they knew what the blacks had done, and they may do it again, and it may be worse next time. And so that was one big change I saw, but like I said, the biggest change I saw was in white students, white administrators. They knew they had a serious problem, and they knew attitudes and things had to change. And so they did a lot of changing on their side, and many black students changed on their side too, because they realized we were in this thing together and nobody was going anywhere, so we had to find some kind of common ground so that we could be together for several hours a day. But also, at the same time, you felt that the stronghold, well, I felt, the stronghold that our parents had on us in the black community looked like it was slipping a little bit, because black kids would have never thought to do anything like this, step out of line or step out of place. Parents just didn't allow it. But we found that when this civil rights era was going on, and after consolidating the schools and all, that control was slipping a little bit. Where it wasn't that parents didn't have control over their kids, it was that kids were doing things outside of what they were supposed to do. And it wasn't that the parents were helpless to stop it, they just didn't know when it was going to happen, so they could, you know, prevent it. And so I think that kind of woke up a lot of people when the riot happened. It woke up many people in the black community, it woke up everybody's whole town. But I think mainly for the black community, it showed our parents that they were losing the grip on the kids, that they've had on the kids on their lives. And that if they didn't hurry up and get some kind of control, you know, something was going to happen. You can't have a tight rein on people and then you lose it. Because what you're going to do, this person who you had that tight rein on, this person going to go out, do foolish things, or things that could get them killed. And that's what was in the back of the mind of many of the parents. Because what was happening in the school was happening outside also. And who knows where my parents come from and the background that they had. You know, white men used to ride around and pick up trucks and all that, and they see a black, they beat them up or pick them up and hang them or something. This was going on in parents' minds. And so they had to figure out some way to kind of rope us back in. Say, look, this is how this is going to be. They had to get in control. But being in a different environment, an environment that you've never been in before, and you see parents letting kids on this side do different things or have different attitudes and things about life and what's right and what's wrong, it was just a bad mixture, I think. Bad mixture. For the black race, I feel it was a bad mixture because I think as long as everything was in its place and people did what was expected of them and they were respectful towards other people, I think the black race here in Chapel Hill really could have gone a long, long, long way. You would have kept seeing a lot of thriving black businesses, thriving black community, close-knit black community. Many of those things you don't see today. It's not there. Even when people speak of it, the black community as being close-knit and all of that, it's not. It's just how people perceive it. But it's not.
Did the churches play any role in
First Baptist trying
to bring back the order within
First Baptist Church and some of the other ministers, but see, it wasn't a thing like just churches. It was everybody in the black community. We were just not used to none of this happening to us. As long as we had a handful of black students in the school, they were going to go through things. Yes, we hear about it and all. We complained to the superintendent of school. We complained to teachers, principal, but that was it. But my life was left alone over here in the black community. Everything was still in its place. It's just that we had some kids going somewhere else. But it was okay because it wasn't everybody. It was just some of them. But nobody was prepared for when it consolidated, when everybody's lives were turned upside down. It was turned upside down, and we've been upside down in a sense. We can't get it back. Now, my parents have died and gone on, but it's my turn now to do what my parents did, is try to hold everything together. It's impossible. You can't. Because everybody thinks different now. Everybody was thinking different after the 60s. And you have to remember, right after the 60s, end with integration, as we're going towards the end of integration. Black is beautiful. I'm black and I'm proud. Afros and everything that was African and all that came in, the sense of black pride and everything, all that came in, everybody was wrapped up in it. And so you had a togetherness. People started drifting back towards togetherness because of that era that we went in. Black is beautiful. But when we went out of that era, you don't see it. You don't hear. Now we're African Americans. And everybody says, big deal. What's in it for me? I'm still the same old person I've been then. I'm still going to have the same rights denied. I'm still going to be discriminated on the job. So what's the big deal of changing one to the other? Because we went from Negro. When I went to work for University Police, we were called Negroes. Then that was unfashionable. We went to blacks. Okay. That's unfashionable, so now we're African Americans. But we are still the same people. We are still in the same boot as we were when we were back there in Negro. It hasn't been that much, that big a change. The change comes when people are strong enough to stand up And you have to be very, very strong to stand up and say, hey, something is wrong here. This is not right. And you have to make the sacrifices, and you have to be loud enough so everybody else can hear you, so they know that you are not happy, that something is wrong. And that's when you get your changes. You make changes that way. But if you keep quiet, you're going to remain a Negro.
What are the changes, not in society, but that the high school, that you think should be made to help the African-American students there?
Well, to be honest with you, I really, truly don't know. Because, you see, I went to school in an environment where it was impossible to learn. But I did learn. So I don't know what the problem is now. If I could learn here at this school, Northside Elementary School, and we had very little equipment for the teachers to teach me with, but I still learned. Lincoln was the same way. And the kids were coming out of the school being a success. You have everything at Chaffee High School. High tech, everything. Computers, you have the whole nine yards. They have all kind of learning programs to help you. They have everything you can imagine. There is no reason whatsoever for any kid to fail, or any kid, or they say a kid can't learn. I can't believe that, and that's why I'm a strong believer of less is better. Sometimes you can put too much in front of a kid. And when you put too much in front of a kid, some kids may, they probably can't learn. But if you go back to your basics, reading, writing, and arithmetic, go back to the basics. You got to start there. I think what our society is doing now, in schools we're trying to keep up with society. Before, you did the basics. You kept up with that, what you were supposed to teach. Anything extra was something extra that a kid just took. But your main reason for being a teacher is to teach the basics. And many of my black kids, so they say in school, can't learn the basics. So what is the problem? If you got a kid who can't pass, a third grade year-end competency test, you know, I think they have it again, eighth grade and then 11th grade, it makes you wonder, how in the world did they get in third grade in the first place? How did they get in 11th grade and can't pass a competency test? What's been happening all those 11 years? And I don't think it's a child's fault that a child goes to school and sits in a classroom. I think it's a teacher's fault if a child can't learn, because the teacher is there to help that child to learn. So I can't blame the children. It has to be somewhere in there is how you teach. You may have to teach differently for different students in order for them to comprehend the lesson plan that you have. You have to be willing to work with a parent. Yes, there are some parents who own drugs, alcohol. We got everything out there now. But for the benefit of the child, you're going to have to connect with somebody who you think would try to encourage this child to do the schoolwork, and so the child can function in school. Now, we have study halls for that. But they have they have everything now that can help a student who is not learning. The government gives schools money to even put teachers in the school system to help with that. But still, they said we can't learn. So what you're going to have to do, if you can't learn it in the books and all, and the attention is not in the books and all, you'll have to ask the students, just like the school did us, what is the problem? You have to ask the students themselves, what can we do to help you learn in this school? What are we doing wrong? Or what do you think we are doing wrong? And don't blame the student. First of all, see what you can do as administrators to try to help this child. If the child want to tell you his background or what is happening to him or her at home, that would be an insight for you to know just what this child has to deal with on a daily basis. And maybe there's a little blockage in there, that maybe he got so many home things bothering this child that the child just can't function in a classroom, but the child knows that he or she has to go to school. But I think if someone took the time, yes, it's going to take time to do it individual, you know, each student or whatever who's falling behind. You have to have somebody that child can sit down with and get that child to open up what is going on with you. How can I help you? But you got to allow that child to tell you how you can help him or her. And once you establish that, then you go from there. But if all you're doing is sitting in the classroom and you keep on trying to teach, because you want them to pass on competency tests or whatever, you're not getting through to the child. You're not teaching the whole child. The whole child, the way you teach them, is the way we were taught at Northside and Lincoln. You taught the child from the inside out. You didn't just put a book in front of the child. Many of the teachers and administrators, they knew the child's situation before the child even came to school. They knew where you live, they knew your parent status, they knew your economic status, they knew everything. So when it came to that teacher and you, because they were so familiar with you in the community and all, they knew how to deal with you. So still you have these kids, they're out of their own environment and they're going into another environment. One that they have to deal with for several hours a day, and then they go back. Whereas before, we didn't have drug dealers roaming around. We didn't have people, alcoholics roaming around. People their own age. People standing around, not made to go to school. You have so many outside influences on you. It's very difficult for some kids who live in certain areas in Chapel Hill or in Carver to actually have time to concentrate on schooling when they're concentrating on the home life and what they have to go back to face when they come out of school. Their only escape is school. But they feel they can't, you know, function to their potential because they got so many other things holding them back. But if a teacher or administrator would take the time, which Edith Caldwell did a whole lot of that, to talk with the kids. You got to get a kid to open up. Many won't. Many will not open up at all. But somebody's got to make the effort. And Hedy Caldwell was a person who the kids will open up to. And their parents. Hedy Caldwell is gone now. And so, you know, it's like I say, sometimes you got to have one of your own in place, whether they do something or not. But Hedy Caldwell was one that did. Remarkable person, but there are other Hedy Caldwells out there, but they just haven't come forward. And there are many who are like, who have the same heart that Hedy Caldwell has, white and black, but kids won't let them in. They got the door locked, and they feel that even if I go to school, so what? I mean, you know, nothing in my life is going to change. Because I have to go back home to the drug addict I have for a mother or a father or no father in the house or, you know.
You're describing a feeling of hopelessness.
Right. Many kids have a sense of hopelessness, and many kids who don't live that way and they live in better neighborhoods or the economic status is not down here but up here, middle income or maybe over. Some of those, they feel the same way that they don't have a place, a sense of belonging somewhere. So we have so many kids that's mixed up now. But I still say they can learn, but it's going to have to be a lot of effort put out there to get these kids to open up. And they have to open up before they can learn. And it has to be with someone who they can trust or feel they can trust. Someone who they know really, truly care about their situation and about them as a person. And where are we going to get that person? of people, we don't know. But I can say there have been many, many whites who have tried. They have. But sometimes, you know, it's hard for some blacks to let them in, even though this might be the only person who actually cares about you. Really, truly. And would do everything he or she could to help you. But sometimes, just because of your color line, it gets blocked. And I have found through going from the seventh grade that I've had whites along the way that was willing to help me. And it helped me a whole lot. And the whites were more willing to help me than some of the blacks who, coming from the black community that was close-knit and all of that. But I found some of these whites who, they just went all out of the way. And they didn't have to. They didn't have to want to see me succeed or finish school or do any of those things. But they took the time to do that. And I guess that's why I have the opinions that I have now. And it was just part of molding me and shaping me, you know, for the life that I've lived.
Are there any areas that I haven't covered or any questions that you don't feel you've answered satisfactorily that you'd like to go back over? Or are there any statements that you just like to make on your own about Lincoln or the integration or Chapel Hill High School?
Well, I just think that when school was first integrated, even though you had a handful going, that the students, that the school system, but it was mostly white then, I think that the students should have been better prepared to what they had to face. They knew somewhat of what they were going to have to face. They knew the resistance was going to be there. But I don't think that any of them thought they were going to be completely shut out of the school system itself as far as going to that school. What I mean by that, yes, I'm going to another school, but I had expected to be treated like a student and not a black person. Even in the back of my mind, I was going to be treated like a black person, but still I thought that the teachers would make the atmosphere where I felt that I was a student and not just a black, because that's where what you were treated like as a black person. You're not treated as a student. And when they consolidated the schools, I think they should have waited years before they consolidated the school to get more people involved in the consolidation process. I also think that if they'd have waited just a little longer, they could have had more blacks eventually going to the school. Because if you lived in one area, you could have done it as like they do now. They put you in areas and they reassign you to schools and things like that. But you would not have had a whole school coming at one time. And if you let people know, well, look, 2 years down the road, we're going to close Lincoln. It's not going to be there anymore. People would have had time to try to readjust to it. Now, there will be some who would tell you that, well, we knew it was going to happen. But the masses of the community did not know it was going to happen.
So it happened like?
Well, there were people on school board, people like that, and the who's who in the black community and white community who knew these things were going to happen. But they were getting the word back. But let's say for the students, we just didn't know smack, bam. You know, you done put a date on and here we are. I'm saying that if they had gave the idea time to just build up and say, well, look, y'all, we're going to consolidate the schools because we can spend more money in one school than trying to keep two schools open. We're going to close. We have to close one school. We need a lot of repairs and all that on the school. We need to close one school. We're going to close the other one, too, and we're going to put everybody out here in one school. But we're not going to do it right away. We're going to wait and so people can make some adjustments to the idea that these schools are going to be closed. And when the other two schools close, you know, there'll be dedications and all this kind of stuff. Everybody be involved, you know. And so you leave the schools and things with your memories and all, but you knew that, you know, the school was going to close. And they closed both schools, the white school and the black school, but they built another one. But we knew that was going to be for whites. We knew that. But it would have given especially the black students and the black community time to deal with the fact that we would no longer have Lincoln. You know, we would no longer have that electricity that runs the town. We would no longer, you know, have a chance to go out and we just see all our faces there. It's time, you know, you'd have had time to deal with all of that. And when the date came, you know, for the consolidation, you might not have had as much anger as you had of resentment. And that's from both sides. It would have given black and white teachers time to get to know one another in those couple of years that they're interacting with one another. They could have had all kind of retreats. They could have had meetings, all of that was leading up to, you know, going out there. And I think had they done that, no one would have lost control. I don't think the black community would have lost control of their kids. That tight ring they had on them, I think it would have remained tight. I don't think we would have had an explosion because people took the time to try to rethink this thing and to try to do the thing right. But in the 60s, that's how things were done. And that's why you had to have National Guards to go with some kids to school in Arkansas. Everything was just chaotic because people didn't take their time, because when you have two races of people who have always been separated, and it was almost like everybody taught that you're not supposed to like each other. That was the biggest problem, I think, with both races of people. A lot of things happened, you know, in both races. A lot of white people got hurt way back when the hangings and all of that. White people got hung too, just like us, because they called, because people thought they were sympathizers, black sympathizers. And so you had a mixture of people. Things were done to them from both sides. But it's just like a fire call. Somebody's house on fire, everybody come together. It's just like Lincoln. When you have homecoming parades, when you had football games, everybody came together. But it all came together for one thing, and that was to be supportive of the kids that were out there on the field, or the kids who were marching down the street. It was a sense of support and that we love you. You felt it. It was just everywhere, and it was coming from everybody. And you knew, like clockwork, rain, sleet, or snow, everybody was going to be together on those occasions. You knew it. Now, they didn't come to our basketball games because, you know, it's closed in and everything, but it did support the football and things like that. But I really truly think that had they taken the time and just done things right, you would have still had the closeness of the black community. You'd have had more parents involved in the PTA. You had more parents involved in wanting to come out and see the teams and things play like we did in black community. You'd have black and white community coming together to see our children combined together playing, representing Chapel Hill. I can say that when the black athletes came in, now Chapel Hill High School got to be a top school, top, because some of the schools that they played didn't have any black kids. And so their, as far as the athletic standards and all, that went up. It didn't come down, it went up, you know. And the white athletes were beginning to appreciate black athletes because they had all this power, you know. Some of them had God-given talent that was never seen, you know, on the field before, because you had many white athletes who, they were outstanding. But these were more outstanding, and, you know, they couldn't believe it. And so, but for the teams themselves, they had a little family within themselves because they had to play together. and they were going out to win. But I think the town of Chaffee could have had the same thing if we hadn't rushed things in the 60s. Like I said, everything was rushed. We had to rush it, taking our time, and I think we would really have a different society, black society today in Chapel Hill. Because if you look at our society, you would think there was still mourning Lincoln. Because it's as if no one gives a damn, you know, about anything. There's so many people in the black community like that. Right? They said, what's the use of fighting? I had many to tell me, Keith, why are you fighting? You know they're not going to change. You know they're not going to do that. But I'm a type of person to take risks. I never know what I can do if I don't do it. I have to make a, I have to try it. And if I don't succeed, then fine, but I did try. That's how I am. And many blacks won't take risks. They won't. And it's not so much as failure. It is because it's sort of like something you were born with. That, you know, you don't risk your money on this or that, or you don't take a risk, speak out, or go against someone, fight. A lot of things that you don't take a risk on. But I'm not afraid to take a risk if I feel that I'm in the right. And many blacks won't do that. They'll let somebody else do that for them, and then they come along for the ride. But I just really truly feel everything could have been done different. And I feel that the black community could have prospered more so because we would have had more black kids going into all kind of schools back then. You did have some going to white universities, but you also had that at Lincoln. But I think you would have had more kids wanting to go on to school or military like they did from Lincoln. A lot of kids, when they finished high school, they just wanted to be out of school. Didn't want to see another school. But that was not what was what you were taught. You were taught to get as much out of life as you could. And even if you had to pay your way to a college or a community college, then you go to Army, go to military. There was always an avenue for you if you really truly wanted to make something of yourself. And that was just a rule. But once they got out of Chaffee High School, it was a different rule. Because you had a different mindset. And so now we're in a mess. And no one knows how to clean it up at Chaffee High School or any of the schools. Chaffee High School is the main school they talk about. No one's talking about the elementary schools, where it's all happening, where it starts. No one is touching on that. And trust me, it starts there. I had a teacher, I went with my niece, to junior high school. No, it was elementary, I'm sorry. I went to elementary school. And the teacher told my sister, my niece, said that we don't think your son is going to graduate, make it to the next grade. And he was in the fourth grade, and they said he was reading on the third grade level. And I asked the principal, I said, now, if he reading on the third grade level, why is he in the fourth grade? I said, now, what is happening here in elementary? The problem is here. This is where they can't learn. But administrators say they can't learn when they get up in the 8th grade and 11th grade. But if you'd have taught them back in the 1st grade, 2nd grade, 3rd grade, then they shouldn't be having no problem when they get up here to 11th grade. But everybody thinks the problem is in the high school. But it's not. It's in elementary. And that's where the school system needs to start. And they've been told this over and over and over. No one's listening.
What about even before elementary? Head Start, places like that?
Well, yeah. Yeah. Head Start is important. But I really feel before a child is passed on to the 2nd grade, they should be efficient in the 1st grade. Head Start helps with that. And when you finish Head Start, you go on into the 1st grade. But to me, going into 1st grade, that's real schooling. And how that teacher teach you in that 1st grade determines how you're going to be taught for, I mean, not t- determine how you're going to be taught, but determines how you're going to learn going through. First grade is the most important grade, and that's where the school system should be on teachers in the first grade. You see any problems in the first grade, work on them. Don't pass a child to the second grade if they haven't gotten the first grade yet. Work with them. Work with them during the summer. You know, you got to start at elementary because that's where my schooling started, first grade. And what I learned in the first grade helped me to the second grade. Second grade on. So somewhere in here, if you get in the third grade and you had a year-round test and you can't pass it, then something happened back here. So you got to start. You got to start from the beginning in order to get to the end. Finish. You got to start there. So I just know that Lincoln was the biggest part of the black community, and well, I wouldn't say the black community, but I would say Chapel Hill. It was a school or institution, if you want to call it, that brought everybody together. Every race, creed, color, age, whatever. It brought us together, and Lincoln produced a lot of productive citizens. A lot of productive citizens, and they did it with little or nothing. And I was talking to my granddaughter just the weekend, and I was telling her about Lincoln High School. She did not know that we even had a black school. She thought that we had always had a mixed school. And I told her no. And I showed her that yearbook, a copy of that I gave to you. She could not believe it. So you see, the work that you are doing is so important, because these are the type of kids that can read about it, and they can read about their ancestors, which their ancestors are them now because they are, you know, high school. But they can see where the aunts, uncles, grandparents went to school. They can see what type of school grandparents and all went to. But from your documentary, and if you have any, you know, like a video or something like that, it would be so important to them, because they would know a life that they didn't even think existed.
Thank you. That's great. We really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.